All right. So we're in Matthew chapter 12. We're between the second and third discourse. You remember from our earlier studies, there's five different discourses throughout the book of Matthew. 11 and 12 is the narrative. So there's discourse followed by narrative. We're in 11 and 12. And then we'll start chapter 13 will be the third discourse that Jesus has. And for many, that's a turning point in their understanding of Matthew especially. Let's look at Matthew 12 here. And let me just read a few verses here, maybe through verse 8. At that time, Jesus went through the grain fields on the Sabbath, and his disciples were hungry. And he began to pluck heads of grain to eat. When the Pharisees saw it, they said to him, "Look, your disciples are doing what is unlawful to do on the Sabbath." But he said to them, "Have you not read that David did when he was hungry? He and those who were with him, how he entered the house of God and ate the showbread, which was not lawful for him to eat, nor for those who were with him, but only for the priest." Verse 5, "Have you not read in the law that on the Sabbath the priest in the temple profane the Sabbath and are blameless? Yet I say to you that in this place there is one who is greater than the temple. But if you do not know what this means, I desire mercy and not sacrifice, you have not condemned the guiltless, for the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath." So here's this controversy that Jesus has with the Pharisees. We made the point last time we were together studying this a couple weeks ago that at the end of verse 11, Jesus says, "For my yoke is easy and my burden is light." And immediately we go into chapter 12 here, and what happens? The Pharisees are laying these heavy burdens on the people. And there was so many burdens. I think I said last week there was 24 chapters that they had written of what you could and could not do on the Sabbath day. It was a whole list of do's and don'ts. And it had been added by the Pharisees to the simple fourth command of God when he gave it to Moses. Here we have Jesus confronted by the Pharisees. They're chasing him all around. They're looking. We'll see here as we get into this later. They're trying to kill him. And so we looked last week. We stopped at verse 5 and 6 here. He says, "Or have you not read in the law that on the Sabbath the priest of the temple profane the Sabbath and are blameless?" This is really just a simple argument, and that is, what is it? What's Jesus' argument here? The priests work on the Sabbath, right? Even the priests work on the Sabbath. And they call it profaning, or they work. But why did the priests work on a Sabbath? Because somebody needs to, right? Because somebody has to work on a Sabbath. So Jesus is taking this simple argument here, and he's turning it on them, the Pharisees. And he says the word profane here can mean pollute or to cross over. But Jesus points to acts of worship that are necessary on the Sabbath. And he says in verse 4 here, but only for the priest. And then in verse 5 here, he says that the Sabbath, the priest of the temple profaned the Sabbath and are blameless. So somebody has to work, and there has to be some work done on the Sabbath. We talked last week about the Sabbath rules, about that women couldn't look in a mirror because they see a gray hair and they may pluck the gray hair and that would be considered work. There was all these rules about eating and drinking. There was all these rules that you could only walk, I think, 200 feet. And then they would, on Friday, they would set out food along the route, and then they could go from one place to another. And so they would extend that. So the Pharisees made exceptions for themselves. It is just, by the time of Jesus, it's so convoluted that nobody can figure it out except Christ. And then in verse 6 here, Jesus makes this clear statement about his deity. Yet I say to you, in this place there is one greater than the temple. Now notice here, he had been talking about the Sabbath and David and the tabernacle, right? And then now he's going to the temple. If you remember, Jesus is up north here, and we'll see here he goes into the synagogues. We'll talk about that in a minute. Where is the temple at? Temple's in Jerusalem. I think it's like 80 or 90 miles away. And so he makes the point here. He's up here in Nazareth and Galilee ministering in the north, and he's talking about the temple, that Herod's temple, the one that's being rebuilt down in Jerusalem. And so he says to them, I'm up here, I'm up north. There's one standing in your presence that's greater than the temple that Herod is building down in Jerusalem. And you can imagine what the reaction would be to that. He makes a very clear claim to his deity. Look at 2 Chronicles 6 with me a minute. Look at 2 Chronicles 6, verse 18. This is Solomon's prayer of dedication. We won't read the whole thing, but it's interesting what he says here. Jesus says, in your presence, there's one greater than the temple. And here's what Solomon says. But will God indeed dwell with men on the earth? That was certainly prophetic, right? Because Jesus will eventually. Behold, heaven and the heavens of heavens cannot contain you. How much less this temple which I have built. So Solomon even understood that even God was greater than the temple that he had built, the original temple. Now when we get to the New Testament, Jesus makes this claim. And for the Jews, what did they see the temple as? How did they view the temple? Yeah, they saw it as presence of God. They saw it as the center of their worship. They saw it as a holy place. They saw it as something great. And Jesus makes several references to the temple in his life. But here he says, there's one in your presence that is greater than the temple itself. In verse 7 here, Jesus repeats what he said earlier in Matthew 9. If you look back at Matthew 9 a minute, chapter verses 10 through 13, notice what he says here in this context. Now it happens as Jesus sat at the table in the house that behold, many tax collectors and sinners came and sat down with him and his disciples. And when the Pharisees saw what he said to his disciples, why does your teacher eat with tax collectors and sinners? When Jesus heard it, he said to them, those who are well need no physician, but those who are sick. But go and learn this. And this is the key, I think, to chapter 9 and also chapter 12. I desire mercy and not sacrifice. I did not come to call the righteous, but sinners to repentance. That had to be a direct hit, right, at the Pharisees, right? And when we get here to chapter 10 or chapter 12, on the earlier occasion, Jesus is making a point about eating and fellowshipping with sinners. And now in chapter 12, Jesus uses the same thought, but this time it's to point out acts of mercy on the Sabbath. So Jesus uses the same quote, or very similar quote, one to point out that God is merciful to sinners and that we as New Testament believers should be compassionate and merciful to sinners. We need to learn and understand what it means. Now when he gets into chapter 12, he uses the same phrase. But his point here is that you need to show mercy on the Sabbath as to others. Be, as it were, do not condemn everybody because of what they're doing. Show mercy and not sacrifice. And notice what he says. You would not have condemned the guiltless. Who are the guiltless here? What's the context? The disciples, right? You would not have condemned the guiltless. The guiltless are the ones that are blameless, and so Jesus throws it right back on him. And then in verse 8 here, the Son of Man is Lord, even of the Sabbath. And so as the Pharisees and the Jewish leaders are adding things to the Sabbath, Jesus is very careful to say, no, here, look at the whole, look at the big picture. And by the way, look at your own heart. Does your own heart desire mercy? Does your own heart show mercy? Does it show sacrifice? Of course it didn't, right? It was hardened, and we'll talk about that later. The Pharisees were adding and subtracting from God's law. In Matthew or Luke 14, and we'll talk, there's another illustration in that here in chapter 12, verse 9. I think that H.A. brought it up last week about when your ox falls in a ditch or your animal falls in a ditch, what do you do on the Sabbath? You get it out, right? And so Jesus is going to make that point that there are exceptions. There are exceptions to the Sabbath law, and the Pharisees were adding to it and causing heavy burdens to be put upon the people. They were on dangerous ground, and certainly we must be careful not to do the same, right? To add to what the Word says or to subtract from it. We must show liberty when times of liberty, must show mercy on times when mercy should be shown here. Any comments or questions before we look at verse 8? All right, the Son of Man here, if the Pharisees were confused about what Jesus was saying in verse 6, notice verse 6, yet I say to you, in this place there's one greater than a temple. Can you imagine what they felt when he blurts out in verse 8 here, that for the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath, of the Sabbath. It had to just, and we'll see here it does, it just tears their heart out. As they become more bitter. He's not only saying that he's greater than the temple, but he's also greater than the Sabbath, right? And the Sabbath would represent the Word of God, the very command of God, the very Old Testament. So Jesus is making that claim here. This is interesting for those of you that like statistics. The Son of Man appears... anybody have any idea how many times this phrase appears in the four Gospels? Take anybody guess? 45? It's actually 81. Yeah, 81 times it appears. I didn't count it. I read somebody else that did count it. So I'm taking their word for it. 81 times in the four Gospels, 30 times alone in the book of Matthew, this phrase occurs. So what would that tell you? It's important, right? It's an important phrase. We need to put it in the back of our mind. It's a clear statement of certainly the two natures of Christ. Can you see here? This is his deity, the Son of Man, right? Fully God, fully man. The Son of Man, Lord of the Sabbath, or ruler of the Sabbath. So Jesus is making a clear statement of his deity, of his two true natures here to the Pharisees, and we'll see that it doesn't go well as we go on here. As I said, it's a clear statement as a deity and as humanity. It's that perfect union of the God-man that we have. Jesus' point here if it was permitted for David and his men to eat the temple and bread, how much more is it lawful for the Son of Man and what? His men, right? You see the disciples and his men to eat a few pieces of corn, as it were, on the Sabbath. And he makes the point as he closes out, especially since what? Jesus is Lord of the Sabbath. And so he throws it right back in their face, as it were, and... he really never answers their question. He just kind of explains to them what the scriptures say. So any thoughts before we look on here? There's a controversy comes up here. Any thoughts? It would have been interesting to be alive at the time, wouldn't it? To see what all the rules and regulations and what you couldn't and couldn't do. I mean, it would almost be, you'd almost be afraid to walk on Saturday or the Sabbath day. Becky. Yeah.
To follow his crew, the little investigators or whatever. I mean, it just always intrigues me. It's like,
yeah.
Justify that, sure.
Yeah. I mean, you can see from Matthew 1 from and 2 as Herod has this hatred for Jesus, and then Satan tries to destroy him. Now we see that the Jews are trying to destroy him, and it's coming from the Jewish leaders. By the way, when you read the phrase or the term Pharisee or the word Pharisee, I think it includes all the Jewish leaders. I don't think it's just the Pharisees here, because you'll read other places. It's the scribes and the Pharisees. It's the Sadducees and the Pharisees. It's the temple priests. The temple guards, of course, arrest him. And so I think the Pharisees represent, as it were, the whole Jewish rule or Jewish people at that point. And so let's look at verse 9 here. Let's go. Yes.
Do the Jews still follow that?
I don't think so. I think some of the in our town, I think, Samuel, do you know, is it the Reformed Jews that are real prevalent here in our town? Yeah, and they're actually the liberal sect, which is they're not Reformed like you would think. Reformed soteriology and Reformed evangelicals, they're Reformed, and they're really, so I'm not sure if the ascetic Jews still follow the, does anybody know? Yeah, I know the kosher laws, Rebecca. It's certainly a warning for all of us to be careful, isn't it? What is biblical and what isn't, and what we think is biblical and what isn't. And certainly opposing it on others. That's Jesus' whole point here, right? I desire mercy, not sacrifice. That's the whole point of this, right? If they would have been merciful to his disciples, then I don't even care about your worship, is what he says. I don't care about your worship, not sacrifice. I care about your heart, mercy, your motives. H.A.? The day of rest became what? A day of burden. There was no joy in the Sabbath for anybody except the Lord of Sabbath, right? Becky?
The only thing that gets me is just, again, how we extrapolate the Sabbath of these believers. That's what we have to be very careful.
not to add or subtract, right? All right. Let's read. Let's do verses 9 through 13 here. And when he had departed from there, he went into their synagogue, and behold, there was a man who had a withered hand. They asked him, saying, is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath, that they might accuse him? It never ends, right? So he said to them, this is the Pharisees, I'm assuming, what man is there among you who has one sheep, and if it falls into a pit on the Sabbath, will not lay hold of it and lift it out? Or how much more value then is a man than a sheep? Isn't Jesus a master teacher? I mean, you can't refute him. And when you try to, he turns it on you. How much more value is a man than a sheep? Therefore, it is lawful to do good on the Sabbath. Then he said to the man, notice this, stretch out your hand. And he stretched out, and it was restored as whole as the other. So here we have, again, this is similar to the story in Luke chapter 14, but a little different. The Pharisees here, again, bring up the controversy. Look at Luke 6:6. If you read verse 9, and when he had departed from there, it looks like immediately after the confrontation with the about the Lord of the Sabbath happened. But look at Luke 6:6. I don't think it was. I think it just means at a later date. If you look at Luke 6:6. And this is the same story about working on the Sabbath. It's the same story in Matthew 12. Now it happened on the second Sabbath after the first that he went through the grain fields, and the disciples plucked the head of the grains and he ate them and rubbing them into their hands. And some of the Pharisees said, why are you doing this? Is it not lawful also to do it on the Sabbath? So it must have been another Sabbath day that he went into the synagogue. And then he departed from there and went to the synagogue and confronted them. You know, I was thinking about this week, and not that I have any original thoughts, but has anybody ever, I've never read anything in the commentaries, if the Pharisees are all worked up about the Sabbath, why don't anybody say anything about the synagogues? Where'd they come from? Where'd the synagogues come from? They invented them, right? Where were the Jews to worship? At Jerusalem. And so in somewhere around, I don't know, some people say 586 BC, somewhere maybe around 300 BC, they came up with this idea of synagogues. And what is that? It's an addition to the law, isn't it? But nobody ever says anything about the synagogues. Synagogues, I think I read that you had to have 10 men in a city and you could form a synagogue. And so these are just places of worship. But here we are in the New Testament. Jerusalem is down there. There's a temple at Jerusalem. But all up north here, these Jews are meeting in these various synagogues all around. Just an interesting thought. Newton?
I think the synagogue came about because they were in captivity and they couldn't get to Jerusalem.
Yeah.
And so they decided somewhere along the line to worship by gathering together where they were in places of captivity. I think that's where it came about.
Yeah, and I think you're right. I think it was born out of necessity. But it's just interesting that it was not part of the, if you're worried about the Old Testament law, certainly the synagogue was an addition to that by the Jews here. But notice what happens. I love this story. It's on the Sabbath day. It's a different Sabbath day than the first one. The Pharisees, they weren't about to stop pursuing Jesus. By the way, on the other hand, Jesus wasn't going to be intimidated by the Jews. And so he goes into the synagogue again, and there's a man there with this withered hand. It says in verse 10 here, notice, and behold, there was a man who had withered hand, and they asked him, saying, is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath that they might accuse him? The NIV reads, they're looking for a reason. looking for a reason. These aren't people just that happen to be there. They're following Jesus. They're searching. They're looking for a reason that they might accuse him. And so we have this confrontation again. There's no doubt that the Pharisees were well aware of Jesus' ability and authority. And so they're not doubting his ability. Notice in verse 10, there was a man who had a withered hand. And they ask him, is it lawful for him to heal on a Sabbath? I think they certainly knew that Jesus could heal, right? They had seen it. They'd seen his disciples heal, been much healing. And so I think they're asking not about his ability, but about the timing. Can you heal on the Sabbath? That's the issue here. I often wonder, and maybe you have too, if this man with a withered hand would have been a son of one of the Pharisees, or a daughter, a nephew, or a brother, you think they would have thought differently about this? I desire mercy, not sacrifice, right? And so it didn't affect them personally. So I always wonder if maybe they would have felt differently or been convicted by this, but maybe not. But certainly you see things differently sometime when you have children than you did before you had children. And so here we go with this confrontation. They certainly would have maybe been easier on Jesus. Now we must remember, according to the law, at least the law of the Pharisees, it was all right to give medical attention on the Sabbath. What was the exception? Why could you? If it was life-saving, that always became, of course, what is life-saving? And that becomes an issue. But here, they're asking him, can you heal on the Sabbath? It's not life-saving, according to their law. Now he's going to say to them, what is lawful and what is not. Certainly this isn't an emergency here. Look at verse 11, and he says, then he said to them, this is the Pharisees, what man is among you who has a sheep? So he kind of tries to make it personal, right? But it'd be interesting if he said, what person among you has a son or daughter that's here this morning that needs healing, if they wouldn't have thought a little different. But certainly they didn't. Jesus builds this reason, builds on the reason of the first question and follows it up with a second question here. And if he falls into a pit, will not lay hold of it and lift it out. And so he forces them to think logically or reasonably, which is hard to do at times. Yeah, so he's forcing them into a corner, assuming they all own something, some kind of property, some kind of sheep. And so here Jesus is building on this this idea that even you might be affected by this. The point here is very personal. The Pharisees Jesus is directing this directly to the Jewish leaders. Notice he says here, what man among you? Who would that be? The Pharisees, right? He's pointing right at the Pharisees. What man among you? Not what man among all of the nation, but what man among you? So you see how Jesus is the master teacher, and he's bringing it right in and pointing it at it, just as pointing directly at that. And then Jesus continues in verse 12 with the questioning of the Pharisees. And it's just a very simple question. How much more valuable is a man than a sheep? Pretty simple, right? Sheep is less value than a man. Now, depending on if you're from PETA, you might see things differently. But in the Old Testament, and when people had the ability to think, Jesus says, man is much more valuable than a sheep, right? We all agree on that. That's not even an argument here. And the Pharisees had no argument. That it is, it's good to save a sheep, but it's even better to save a man here. Why is it better to save a man than a sheep? Right. What is man? He's made in the image of God. And so Jesus has taken the point. If you know the Old Testament, sheep were created, man was created, but man was created in the image of God. And so he's saying to the Pharisees, the sheep is not created in the image of God. And if it's worth saving a sheep, isn't it certainly worth, from the lesser to the greater, worth saving some a man or a woman who's made in the image of God? And so he takes the answer right to them. Y'all ever wonder sometimes if the Pharisees thought, maybe I shouldn't ask that question, you know, because at some point they're stuck, aren't they? They're just completely stuck. And rather than repenting, we'll see what happens. They harden their hearts and turn against Christ. It's a very sad thing here. They become bitter and hardened. Look at verse 13. And he said to the man, he goes from them among you, the Pharisees, and he turns his attention directly to the man. That's the Pharisees had pointed him out, by the way, in verse 9 or verse 10. Behold, there was a man who had a withered hand, and they asked him, saying, so the Pharisees had pointed him out. Now Jesus looks at this man, and he says, stretch out your hand and restore him. What's unique about this? What doesn't Jesus do? Doesn't touch him, right? We saw all along that Jesus had been touching people, or people had been touching Jesus. Jesus doesn't touch him. All he does is speak to him. He just says, nor does the man touch Jesus. The man doesn't reach out and touch Jesus, but his hand is restored. You can picture it. You know, here's a withered hand, a crippled hand, one shorter than the longer, and the man just reaches out and they're together. You've all seen, I think, on TV or YouTube of some phony faith healer, and he takes somebody's foot and he pulls it out, and, you know, they do the same trick at the chiropractor, right? Because your leg's longer than the other, and so when they measure your leg and then they tell you to move this and move that, next thing you know, your leg's the same length. That's a trick. That's charlatans that do that, or you pay the chiropractor that does the same thing. But this is a withered hand, a short hand, and all of a sudden it becomes long. And notice it's interesting what it says here in verse 13. He stretched it out, and it was restored as whole as the other. Looked the same, right? One was right, one was left, but they were both the same. And I think it's just an amazing thing here. Look at Mark chapter 3 with me a minute. Mark 3. Again, we see the hardness of the Pharisees here. It's almost unbelievable, the hardness of their heart. And, of course, it climaxes at Jesus' death. Mark 3, verse 4 and 5. Notice this here. Let's just, this is the same story in Mark. Let me start with chapter 3, verse 1. And he entered a synagogue again, and a man was there who had the withered hand. So they watched him closely, whether he would heal him on the Sabbath, so that they might accuse him. They're accusing him. Then Matthew says they actually pointed him out to them, to Jesus. And then look what happened. And he said to the man who had the withered hand, step forward, and he said to them, is it lawful on the Sabbath to do good or to do evil, to save life or to kill? But they kept silent. Should have never asked a question, right? And then he says, and when he had looked around at them with anger, being grieved at the hardness of their hearts. Jesus was angry that they were bitter. They had hardened their hearts. It's interesting here. Hardened their hearts, and he said to the man, stretch out your hand, and he stretched it out, and his hand was restored as a whole as the other. And so Jesus recognized, even while he was healing them, that their hearts were even becoming more bitter, more hardened, and more angry at Christ. Again, go back to Matthew 9. I desire mercy, not sacrifice. And the Pharisees never got it. They just became harder and more bitter and more bitter. And it's a warning to all of us to be careful the same way. Any comments about the man with the withered hand? H.A.? Oh, yeah. If one sheep's valuable, one man's really valuable, right? One man or one woman. All right, we're out of time. We'll pick it up next week. And I'll have to talk today, make a decision how we're going to handle the rest of the chapter. I'm not sure what's